Dive into the world of dance at the Victorian College of the Arts. Their program offers a unique blend of artistry, performance, and a choreographic practice within an inclusive environment. As an undergraduate student, you explore contemporary dance, physical theatre, ballet, urban dance, and more in a collaborative studio lab setting. At honors level, specialize in performance skills, choreographic practice, or dance research. Plus, benefit from the proximity of local choreographers and companies including Philip Adams, Stephanie Lay Company, Lucy Guerin, Chunky Move, and Dance House. Through professional placements, their students have the opportunity to develop pathways for their future careers through these relationships and networks. Consider a variety of bachelor, master's, and even doctorate programs available according to your needs. Join them and unleash your artistic potential at the Victorian College of the Arts. Learn more through the link in the descriptions below.
I didn't want to be a part of that project if I was paid well, the company name, someone's flaunting it, or the producers of that project were getting paid, but the dancers who are the bread and butter and the product and the face of the show were not getting paid well. I just said, that's just not something I want to be in it, and I was ready to walk away from it.
Hello and welcome to The Background Dancer. I'm your host, Jason Yup. Thank you for joining me with our community of passionate dance contributors from around the world and across different fields. In this podcast, I offer educational conversations and insightful tips to help you better understand all things offstage about this curious art form. Business is the bedrock of modern society, providing the tools for all supply and demand, be it in the arts or otherwise. As artists, however, we are often our own businesses and the bedrock of the gig economy. Without freelancers, the arts would literally crumble. In this extract, we talk about ways to approach dance as a solo entrepreneur, a business person of your own career, and a financially savvy decision maker in an ever-changing, unpredictable, and often cutthroat industry.
All right, I got a curiosity. Maybe this is much more for Joshua as well, pertaining back to this idea of like value. Right? Like, as we all know, there's something called the opportunity cost. So, for example, can you remember when you've been offered a contract or any sort of job, and because the conditions were not as satisfactory or not even close to being satisfactory, you were much more leaning towards rejecting that contract, but you at that very moment in time, you maybe did not have anything else to latch onto, any other sort of jobs, like would you still kind of do that? Would you still reject that offer and kind of go jobless for an even longer time? Or would you take that contract and kind of like, okay, for lack of a better phrase, like suck it up, you know, under very, very shitty conditions? Because, yeah, that's what I used to do as well.
I think we've all done it.
Yeah. But yeah, like this idea of like, okay, at what point can you actually say that I'd rather go jobless instead of doing this shit? Because, like my time is much more valuable. I mean, another way to look at value is, I think whilst both of you were speaking, I was thinking, okay, like the times that I've been able to sort of sell my value at the highest possible peak is when I view my value not in terms of, like you said, like a touchable sort of product, right? Like I know I am the product, but what I'm actually basically selling is my knowledge. So my accumulated knowledge my whole life. And this kind of knowledge, when paired with certain skill sets, become the product that we are actually selling. So in terms of your experiences, like how have you been able to navigate that, you know, because you are like you said, you know, a freelancer, and you really have to deal with this idea of like balancing between accepting really shitty contracts versus like the potential of going jobless for an extended period of time?
That's a great question, and I'm ready to jump on it right away. I think it really comes down to understanding what your needs are. And I do that every year. Like, I forgot when I started this, but every year I make a list of what is most important to me. And I change and reorder that as what is the topmost priority. And I love it when I see something that's not financially or artistically derived come higher up on the ladder. Things like, oh, quality time with friends and family. And I was like, oh, wow, I'm prioritizing this now over career advancement opportunities, so to speak. So I think for me, having that really clear has really helped me be able to choose what is worth it. And depending, and because I have that priority list, even if the work is shitty, I have taken it on, sucked it up, knowing what's in it for me. And an example I have is I did one shitty ass job that I tried to erase from my memory because the pay was crappy, the show was shitty, the experience was really bad with that choreographer and that production, all of it. But I took that knowing that during that creative process, I would be networking. I would have time, whatever money little that was, to understand the context and the scene in Bangalore. And also, I also knew what my opportunities were going into the Bangalore. I knew that even if the pay was less, I could save on it by staying with friends or trying to offset as much of the opportunity costs in it. And lo and behold, I moved to Bangalore after that. And it really set me up. And I know that work was shitty, but I just took it knowing that there was something, like it offered something of value and opportunity for me, even if it was not financial. So I think what you said is really, really key in that we have to realize what resources are available for us. And a lot of the times it's also time, not just financial. Finance is a big thing, and I harp on that all the time in to anyone I come across, teach or work with. I'm like, yeah, you have to pay everyone. And part of that, with this project that I mentioned, NDA, I can't really talk about it. I was okay to just not do that project, even though it was really something that really excited me, the project. But given that if I didn't want to be a part of that project, if I was paid well, the company name, someone's flaunting it, or the producers of that project were getting paid, but the dancers who are the bread and butter and the product and the face of the show were not getting paid well, I just said, that's just not something I want to be in it. And I was ready to walk away from it. And I think that's what kind of made me be able to negotiate a better deal for the future dancers I'll be employing. So I think for me, identifying what's valuable for me, my needs, really helps me able to, you know, suck it up when it's necessary. Yeah. Does that answer the question? Yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. yeah, for sure, man. Like, I think, wow. Let's put it this way. So, I really like the fact that this NDA project that we're talking about as well is that you were also responsible for other people, right? So when that yeah. becomes another factor to factor in, that's going to be much more complicated. Like, you're not just sort of fighting for a contract for yourself, which in most cases isn't as complicated, but, you know, yeah. sort of also responsible for other people's well-being. Oh my gosh, like, they look up to you to go and obtain the best contract possible. So then you're not just sort of, what do you call it, pinpointing your value based on your own work or your life's work. You're also sort of distributing value across maybe a couple of different people. And each individual, of course, offers a different set of values. So that's something quite interesting within, when, for example, one day if you do open, I mean, you already have a collective, but for example, when you are really flooded with contracts, hopefully one day, you know, and that collective, the 206 collective getting to tour and all that, you're going to have to really think about all these contracts and how they sort of help the individuals who are part of your company and how to continue providing for them the best possible way so that they don't leave. And not just that, but if they do, they would still have the best possible relationship with you, right? And I actually experienced, just to share a little bit, like I experienced this quite a lot at my own company, because my company right now, I mean, it's a very small company, and with small companies, there's always this, how, let's say, you can say like it's almost like a fear that when they lose people, they always have to fear that they won't be able to replace them with someone just as good, or let's just say someone familiar with their work, right? So for example, they signed me to this company 3 years ago, and I'll probably stay for another year, but like before we made that decision together collectively, like I was speaking out about like, okay, I really do want to leave. That's why I was auditioning around. And there was this fear of like, okay, oh my gosh, if you leave, then how are we going to replace you, and how are we going to have the same, let's say, domain of knowledge? Are we going to have to restart everything all over again? So we went into a lot of these discussions of like, okay, what can we do for like the company, or what can the company sort of do, like upskill in order to sort of persuade people who are already at the company, firstly, not to leave, to have more motivation to stay, but at the same time, sort of act as a magnet, an attraction for other talents all around the world to come to this company. And it all goes back to the idea of like value. Once again, like what value do you provide to the company? Because in other companies that I know, I've heard of companies that literally just sack their people right on. Like there are a couple of stock theaters in Germany that as soon as the new director came in, they just literally fired the entire crew.
Ouch, that's
painful. Second thought. Yeah. So one day they were rehearsing, the next day they receive a letter saying, oh, sorry, we will not offer you a new contract. Everyone's going to go, including some of the rehearsal directors even. And that is just painful, and probably you won't see that in a smaller company because it's a much more intimate setting. And yeah, like the resources are very limited. At the same time, because of that limitation, you wouldn't get this sort of free-for-all buffet as well, where in big companies, like everyone wants to be part of, you can easily find talent. You know, small companies, people don't want to go there. That's why there's always sort of this double-edged sword of like, people don't want to go there, but people who already are there are told not to leave. So for me, it's always about like, okay, I have value. So how can I sort of either increase my value at this company, so that it serves the company, but at the same time, one day if an opportunity arises, I can also leave the company, because at the end of the day, I am my own business, right? Like, I cannot sort of, whatever company at all, you can't sort of serve one company that's like not yours for forever, unless that company is aligned with your values from top to bottom. Like, my father worked for the same company for 30 years, actually 45, and I don't think our current generation has anything close to that kind of loyalty. But at the same time, there are so few companies nowadays who also treat their employees with that much loyalty. So
yeah,
I really like the idea that, yes, you have to treat yourself like a business. You have to have your multitude of insurance policies in case something goes wrong, but at the very end of the day, like you said, Joshua, like learning how to take care of that value, and in fact, for me, like because of my personality and all that, it's always about how to increase that value as I go, right? Because for example, you got this NDA project, right? I also have an NDA project that I would love to
I love
about.
That we're talking so much about this NDA project. It's like, don't talk about it, but I'm just like,
look, that should be the topic
40%
of our
time talking about this project.
Next topic is dancing Joshua's NDA.
I love the NDA part about it. It's like, oh my god, I can't talk about it. NDA. Like, okay, shit. Like, hey guys, guess what? I have an NDA project too. I can't talk about it, but I would love to talk about it. Please, can I break the NDA clause? You know, like, but seriously, like, okay, I got this new NDA project, right? Like, and honestly, like, when it came to me, this is the first time I've ever received any kind of job of this nature. Right, and it's of course, you know, something to do with media and my podcasting work. It's like, oh my gosh, this is the first time I've received a job that is sort of related to my venture into podcasting, into media work, that is non-dance related, that still relates back to a dance sort of setting. And then when I think about it, it's like, across my years of like dancing and building this profile, the goal was always to increase that said value of who you are that you attribute to yourself. And then when somebody on the outside looks at you, it's always sort of very different, because you can kind of sell yourself in a certain way, but you are worth what someone is willing to pay for, right? Mm-hmm. So like when this project came to me, I was like, what? Wait a minute. I've never thought of myself as that particular disability, an NDA style thing, but at the same time, it's like, oh my gosh, I have that value. Like, people are willing to pay me to do that kind of work. So, okay, the value has increased. And the best thing about it is that, I don't know about you, Joshua, but like, for example, like, okay, someone's going to pay me like $100 for this contract, right? And then if I receive a similar job again in the future, like, hell no, I'm going to go down to 99.
Exactly.
I'm keeping it 100. Yeah. I'm gonna go to 1,000. Like, holy shit, you know. and those guys would be like, "Hey, Joshua, how can you charge at $1,000?" And like, "Oh, don't blame me. Blame the guy who paid me 100 2 years ago. Well, that was 2 years ago. Like, you know, adjusted for inflation, like it's 1,000 now." You know,
inflation. Yeah. No, 100%. I think. Again, this comes back to understanding your situation, your USP, and, you know, as there's two things key here. It's, I want to say, don't compare yourself with others, because I think your situation is always going to be different. Like, where are you able to make concessions and compromise a little just to get yourself advance a little? But also, I think it's important to, as you said, you know, ask around who else is in this field, who else is doing this, just to, one, educate yourself, understand the standards and benchmarks so you can raise the standards, not just for yourself, but for the industry, you know. So I think there is room for growth and abundance for everyone. I really believe in lots of abundance and space. And something I keep quoting, I think it came up during these podcasts, is dance is a hugely underinvested industry, right? So I think the more we understand this and leverage it for our benefit and for the others' benefit, I think we just keep rising on top. So 100% agree, Jason.
And so when I'm thinking about this next festival, I'm thinking about, you know, what have we experienced, or what do we provide, or what are we all about? You know, sort of what Joshua was saying earlier, like, what is the organization's ethos in creating, you know, a strong business strategy? And so to me, what I think about, just on a very surface level analysis, you know, for Strengths of All House, you know, we're a team of artists, we're passionate, we aren't necessarily driven by money. We are trying to create a new space for free and accessible dance opportunities. We're the only ones that really exist in LA at this capacity. We're small scale right now, but it is scalable depending upon how much, you know, money and funding that we bring in, because really that's just the biggest issue that we have is money. But that's the issue that we're trying to eliminate for those that are in attendance. So I think that's a strength for us that we can develop as long as we take on our opportunities. And I think the opportunities that lie ahead for us is, you know, bigger events, bigger donors, bigger classes, bigger festivals, bolstering a bigger online live stream community, connecting with other events and festivals, as well as organizations and artists, because we're an artist collective that appreciates and celebrates art that's around us, that are local and within our own individual network. There's opportunities to branch out from just even festivals, dance and music, to film or video games or other modalities of art, like the visual arts, or even things that are consumable, like food, like, flower bouquets or ceramics or, you know, artistic prints. And that is something that we can create on a larger scale once we are able to acquire more funding through different opportunities. But I think what can be also a strength can also be a weakness, which for us is that creating a free and accessible event, everybody kind of knows there's nothing really truly free in this world. And so there's always going to be someone who takes the cost. And to me, a strength of my own is that I'm willing to self-invest and put into this because it's a passion project of mine that I absolutely love. And I mean, even last Saturday, I didn't even have to have a lick of caffeine, but I felt like I was just high on crack cocaine because I was so happy and excited to see how well it was working and how people were just coming together and celebrating, and just everybody was just all smiles. I mean, it was just, it was fascinating.
So there you have it, another wonderful extract discussion of our Clubhouse Roundtables, White Arts by JCast. In our next and final episode of our Clubhouse special series here, we explore dance and failures. What were some of your biggest failures in dance? Well, we like to know, but stay tuned and we'll see you in the next one. Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode. Be sure to subscribe, comment, and leave a review on your designated podcast and social media platforms. If you found this interesting or helpful, feel free to share with members of your community so that they too may connect with us in our quest to foreground dance in the background. I'm Jason Yup of The Background Dancer, and as always, catch you next time. If you're listening to this, you are most definitely a dance enthusiast, maybe even one for dance science. Well, why not join the International Association for Dance Medicine and Science, or IADEMS for short, and become part of a global community dedicated to supporting dancers and performers worldwide. With active members from over 50 countries, including experts in dance, medicine, and science, IADEMS provides a diverse network of support and resources. As a member, you'll gain access to exclusive benefits such as discounts to year-round events, their vast collection of e-learning opportunities, and a subscription to the Journal of Dance Medicine and Science, amongst other incredible and unique offers. Join the mission for better outcomes and apply for an IADEMS membership today. Click the link in the descriptions below for more info.